Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22. Elements of Material Creation, Text 33. Yo, Sao, Guna, Shobha, Krito, Vikara, Pradhana, Mula, Mahata, Prasuta, Aham, Tri, Vrin, Moha, Vikalpa, Hetur, Vaikarika, Tamasa, Aindriyash, Cha, Yo Saugunakshobha.
Yo-sa-guna-kshobha-krito-vikara
Pradhanamulan-mahata-prasuta
Pradhanamulan-mahata-prasuta
Aham-tri-vrin-moha-vikalpa-hetur Vaikarikas-tamasa-aindriyas-cha Yasaugunakshobhakritovikara Pradhanamulan-mahata-prasuta Aham-tri-vrin-moha-vikalpa-hetur Vaikarikas-tamasa-aindriyas-cha Yasaugunakshobhakritovikara Pradhanamulan-mahata-prasuta Aham-tri-vrin-moha-vikalpa-hetur Vaikarikas-tamasa-aindriyas-cha
Guna
of the modes of nature,
Kshobha,
by the agitation, Krita, caused, Vikara,
transformation,
Pradana Mula,
which is generated from the
Pradhan. The unmanifest form of the total material nature. Mahata. From the Mahatattva. Prasuta. Generated. Aham. False ego. Trivlet.
In three phases.
Moha.
Of bewilderment.
Vikalpa
and material variety.
Hetu, the cause. Vaikarika,
in the mode of goodness.
Tamasa,
in the mode of ignorance.
Aindriya, in the mode of passion. Cha, and translation. When the three modes of nature are agitated, the resultant transformation appears as the element false ego in three phases,
goodness, passion, and ignorance, generated from the Mahatattva, which is itself produced from the unmanifest Pradhan, this false ego becomes the cause of all material illusion and duality. Purport. By giving up one's false ego of identification with the three modes of nature, one can achieve Krishna consciousness, the pure original state of existence. The word moha vikalpa hetu indicates that because of false ego, one considers himself to be the enjoyer of nature, and thus develops a false sense of material duality in terms of material happiness and distress. False ego is removed by identifying oneself as the Lord's eternal servitor in full Krishna consciousness. Yosauganakshoba krito vikara pradana mulan mahata prasuta aham trivrin moha vikalpa hetur vaikarikas tamasa andriyas cha. When the three modes of nature are agitated, the resultant transformation appears as the element false ego in three phases: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Generated from the Mahatattva, which is itself produced from the unmanifest Pradhan, this false ego becomes the cause of all material illusion and duality. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachyadeshtarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gauravakturinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpatrivyas jagripa sindhu vyevaja Vadidhanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So this is the description of the elements of material creation, and here in the context of the process of creation and how everything develops within this material world from that process of creation, step by step. And the steps, the different phases that the process goes through as everything unfolds from Pradhan through to the situation as we see it, as we are living within it here. As everything unfolds step by step, in many respects, the actual stages that are gone through reflect the importance, the significance of the particular whatever is being manifest in the different stages, one after the other. At least to some degree it's like that. In other words, that the things that come out at the beginning in the process of material creation, they're very foundational in terms of just life in general within this material world. And things that come out later, this is perhaps not an absolute point, but in many cases, they are more secondary. So what is being described here is that, well, actually, the process itself is described in a little more detail in Brahma Samhita, in that the Lord glances. Everything material is in the condition of Pradhan,
described here as the unmanifest, unmanifest form of matter. So everything is there in that, everything material is there within that pradhan, and the Lord glances, Mahavishnu glances. Yes, so that pradhan, of course, when we say unmanifest, the specific intention in terms of the use of the term unmanifest is that everything is there, but it just hasn't shown itself yet. It's all there, but it's a question of visibility, and in terms of the condition of the pradhan, of extracting things so that they can be seen and experienced in and of themselves, rather than just be all mixed up together. And when they're mixed up together, then you cannot see the different component parts. And an example which is given sometimes is the example of making a soup. In fact, the scientists, our old friends, the scientists, they have this idea that in the beginning, at least some of them had the idea, in the beginning there was a soup. Mm-hmm. And then something happened, and out of the soup came everything, all the different particular things. And those of you who are cooks would know, and I think anyone would know really. A soup, you take various ingredients and then you put them all together in the pot and cook them. And in many cases, depending on the soup, but in the case of a soup which is really cooked, in the end, you can't see any of the particular ingredients. It's all just got all sort of mixed up together. And you cannot see, there's our potato, there's the salt, there's the cauliflower. Can't see, because it's all mixed. So the example we give is, if you were to video that, and then play the video backwards, you would start with the soup, and you'd end up with all the ingredients assembled, waiting for the process of cooking to begin. So, this is how the scientists see the creation of this material world. And at least in this sense, we agree with them. In this sense, at least as far as it goes, in the sense that the pradhan is like that soup. Everything is mixed up. You cannot see. There is earth. Over there is water. And over there is the mode of goodness. And over there is Madhu Mangal. And you cannot see all the different component ingredients because they're all sort of melted down and mixed up. But then the Lord glances, and because of the potency of the glance, His glance has power. Because of the potency of the glance, that pradhan, that conglomerate, it starts to unwind itself. And all the different component parts start coming out. This is a type of example which to some extent gives an idea. So this is described in Brahma Samhita. The Lord glances on the pradhan, and then all these things come out, and then you come to this point, three modes, and earth, water, fire, ether, and sensory functions, and so on like that. So, according to the description of Lord Brahma in Brahma Samhita, the glance In the glance, there are different parts, different elements or different shaktis, different potencies, energies are there in the glance. They have different effects because they have different natures. But the Kala Shakti, the potency of time, when it contacts the pradhan, then the process of unwinding begins. The Kala Shakti, it stimulates the pradhan to start separating into the component elements. The living entities are injected also in the glands, and the Kala Shakti stimulates their karma. Their karma stimulates the modes of material nature. This is about where we are here. Yes. So, this is right in the very beginning of the process of material creation, and as described here, when the modes of nature are agitated by the glance of the Lord, by the Kala Shakti, then when the modes of nature are agitated, in this context, the first thing, seeing it's all a process of manifestation from being mixed up, the first thing practically which manifests is false ego. False ego. And not just false ego, but three particular types of false ego. False ego in goodness, false ego in passion, false ego in ignorance, tamaguna. Three types of false ego. So, false ego then is a very fundamental, basic, very foundational part of material existence. And it comes upon the living entity, and the living entity then identifies with material existence in one way or another, goodness, passion, or ignorance, and identifies very strongly. And, well, this is material life. This is material life. False ego is such a foundational thing. It is such an anchor within this material world. I don't know how many of you are from nautical backgrounds, but if you're in a boat and you put the anchor down, then, generally speaking, you are not going anywhere. The wind may blow, the waves may come, you will stay, because you are anchored. Of course, if there's a big storm, then the anchor may drag and you may also get swept away, even though there's an anchor. So, but in this context, the point is, while we still have false ego, while we still have false ego, even though some things may be happening in this context, we could say some Krishna conscious things are happening, some things which are trying to move us from our situation in this material world. But while false ego is still there, while we're anchored like that with bodily identification, identification with this world, identification with the mind, and just seeing that material existence is, I am part of it, while false ego is still there strongly, then even though some efforts may be there for spiritual realization or something like that, well, for spiritual realization, actually, But while false ego is still there, it's very hard. You can't really get out of material existence. So, false ego means I am this material body. Fundamentally, in the most fundamental sense, false ego means I am something other than a servant of Krishna. It could be anything. Goodness, passion, ignorance, and of course there are subdivisions. There are 8,400,000 species of life. So that means 8,400,000 types of false ego. Different types of human being, 400,000 types of human beings. Yes, means 400,000 different types of human false egos, distinct from each other, at least to some degrees, sufficiently for them to be distinguished as being separate species. So just see, Hindis, Tamils, Telugus, Zulus, Pedis, Tikalosh. All different types of false ego. Even within the human species. And ultimately, when you come down to it, it's not just a species. It doesn't end at the species level. It ends on the individual level. Me. Who I am. My sense of identity. In other words, my false ego. So, yes. So, therefore, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that, at least particularly in terms of in terms of impersonal realization, at least in terms of impersonal realization, Lord Krishna makes the point in Bhagavad Gita, it can take many lifetimes. There are a number of places in Bhagavad Gita where Lord Krishna says things like, for example, kleshodi kataras tesham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta hi gatir dukam dehavadbiravapyate. So there Lord Krishna is making the point that avyakta sakta, avyakta asakta. Avyakta means the unmanifest, impersonal. Asakta means attached. We even have Srila Rupa Goswami, when he describes the process of devotional service, the different stages, one of them is called asakti. And it means attached to Krishna. That as you're approaching perfection, but not there yet, but you're making very good progress towards perfection on the threshold, then you develop asakti, very strong attachment to Krishna. In this verse, in Bhagavad Gita, I think it's chapter 12, verse 5, Lord Krishna says, avyakta asakta. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifest, impersonal aspect of the Supreme, advancement is very difficult, very troublesome. It's always difficult to make advancement in that discipline for those who are embodied. Avyakta hi gati dukam. When your gati is avyakta, the unmanifest, impersonal feature, then hi dukkha. It is, he means certainly, definitely. It's a term of emphasis in that sense. Dukkham means miserable, difficult, a struggle. It's a very negative term. So yes, because, and so why is it like that? Why is it so difficult? We're talking in this case particularly about impersonal processes of realization. Why is it so difficult? Ultimately, because false ego is so strong. It is such a foundational part of material existence. It is such a strong anchor that even though people may endeavor for many lifetimes, Krishna explains that later in Bhagavad Gita, actually in the 18th chapter, after many lifetimes, they may come to me. Yes. So why is it like that? Well, of course, just material existence is very difficult in so many ways. But the final point is false ego. Who am I? And until the person really becomes properly situated in a position free from false ego, then, well, they're not really going to get out of material existence. Even in terms of impersonal realization, Lord Brahma makes the point in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, right at the beginning, 2nd chapter, verse 32. The prayers of the demigods, it is Lord Brahma speaking. And Lord Brahma makes the point, Patantyada. Those people, how does that verse begin? 10 to 32. Can't just remember right this second. But Patanchido Narjata Yushmad Angrayaha. Because they have no attachment to your lotus feet, they fall down. Yeah. Avashuddha Buddhaya. They have these impersonal ideas. Avashuddha Buddhaya. It is their manifestations of contaminated consciousness. And have you got it there?
Yenye Arvindaksha.
Okay. The Mukta Maninas. Yenye Arvindaksha Vimukta Maninas Twayastabhavad Avashuddha Buddhaya. Arura Krishrena Param Padam Tatam Patanchida Najita Yushvadangraya. Yay Anyay Aranvindaksha. Those who are attached to something other than Aravindaksha, Krishna, the lotus eyed Lord, then for them, the Muktamaninas, they may think they're liberated. In their minds, Maninas, in their minds, they may think they're liberated. But it's just a mental phenomenon and Patanchida, they fall down again. Because even though they're endeavoring for a spiritual goal, some impersonal spiritual goal, but it's still false ego. Because what is our fundamental definition of false ego we mentioned? To think you are something, anything, other than the eternal servant of Krishna. And that even includes to think that I am aham brahmasmi. Mm-hmm. I am just some Brahman, something. Mm-hmm. A particle of Brahman or something along those lines. And even Srila Prabhupada made the point, these impersonalists, they're really in false ego still, even though they're endeavoring for some transcendental type of objective. But still, they themselves are very much in false ego, in the sense that the idea that it is all one, it is all God, we are all God, I am God. Aha. That's false ego. To think I am God, I am everything, I am everywhere, whereas actually I am not. I am right here. And I'm just little living entity, eternal servant of Krishna. So we can see how much false ego is still prominent, even though they're endeavoring for some impersonal realization, because they can so easily accept, they're happy to accept, I'm God. You can't get a bigger false ego than that. That's it. That's false ego to the maximum. There's nothing beyond that. So in this way, they are robbed. At the last stage, they've come to the human form of life. They've come to understand some Vedic concepts. They've come to understand that I am not this body, I am an eternal spiritual entity. They've come a long way from, you know, cat and dog existence in the lower species in the material world. They've really come a long way. But then Patanjali, at the last step, they fall down because they don't get this point that I'm the eternal servant, but rather false ego. I'm God. Or I'm anything other than the servant of Krishna. So yes, this is the last snare of Maya, to think that I'm God, after coming such a long way and going through and sorting through so many difficult situations, finally you come to this point, it's the last snare of Maya. So what is the solution? What is the real situation? The real situation or the solution is to accept that Jivera Swarup Haya Krishnera Nityadas. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. To really accept that at heart. This is essential. And then to live like that. To live according to my real ego. Ego, as a Latin term, ego means I am. Ego. There's nothing wrong with ego in that sense, because I am. If it means what I actually am, then it's good, it's right, it's important to have the right ego. But if it's false ego, oh, that's material existence. So as devotees, we need to accept this, that I am actually the eternal servant of Krishna, and I am not all the other ideas. Basically, I am not the enjoyer of this material world in whatever way. Yes. Of course, false ego is so strong. And the mind is so strong, the senses are so strong, and Maya is so strong. Even though we've, to some degree, accepted this, but still, sometimes, alternative ideas pop up. Who can say that since they became a devotee and really made Krishna consciousness the focal point of their lives, who can say that some alternative idea never popped up into the mind? Who can say that? Any volunteers? Maybe.
Nothing.
Only if we're really trying to impress the other devotees or ourselves. So our conditioned nature is very strong. But we really have to hold on to the actual real ego. Who am I? I'm the servant of Krishna. Therefore, my life is one of Krishna consciousness. And other things, you know, from the old days, my previous material attachments, attractions, things like that. No, no, no. That's all just, that's the past. Forget the past that sleeps. Yeah. So this is Krishna consciousness. We have to accept that in our minds, in our hearts, and mold our lives in those terms. And then, by the proper practice of sadhana bhakti, getting up early in the morning, following the morning program, chanting our rounds, really making our best effort to chant our rounds attentively without offenses, really making those types of efforts throughout all the different aspects of our lives in Krishna consciousness, then that in turn strengthens the real sense of the real ego, who I am. I'm the servant of Krishna. On the basis of accepting I'm the servant of Krishna, we engage in the process, and by the potency of the process, our sense of being the eternal servant of Krishna is strengthened. And this is called becoming fixed up in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada used this term. Fixed up. Up. Above the material energy. Yeah. So this is what we must do. This is a very important thing to do. And when or if we see that somehow or other, some other idea of who I am, and therefore what my program in life should be, if some other idea crops up, then we should know, this is Maya, this is false ego. This is like fundamental problem. This is like root level problem. That is the root of our material existence. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes material existence as being like a tree. And Srila Prabhupada, at least in the purports, refers to, I think, Shvetashvatara Upanishad, some Upanishads, which talk about the situation of the living entity as being in the tree of the body. And there are two birds in the tree. One is the soul, the other is the super soul. So the tree, what keeps a tree going is the roots. The roots are in the ground, and as a result the tree lives. You can take off all the leaves, the flowers, the fruits, you can cut off all the twigs, you can cut off all the branches, but if the root is still there, then there's every chance the tree may continue. Just like many years ago, before all these houses were here, across the road, this other section, it was just wild. It was just wild. It was just trees and jungle. And every now and then the city would come and cut the trees. And then we'd look out and, oh, no trees. It's all sort of open. And six months later, there'd be a whole lot of trees. Because many, many trees, like grass. You cut the grass down to the ground. In a few days, the grass is up again. So, the root, this is the real, where it's all coming from. So, our material existence is rooted. The false ego is the root. That I am anything other than a servant of Krishna. I am a demigod. I'm a human being. I'm male, female. It's all just different parts of false ego in terms of the modes of different combinations of the modes of nature. So really what we need to do, Krishna consciousness means to uproot the tree of our material existence. Not just to cut some of the branches off that, oh, you know, I used to be attached to fast cars, fancy cars. I'll renounce that. So, you know, now my material life is finished because now I've transcended, because I don't care about fancy cars any longer. That's like cutting off a branch. But really what's required is to uproot the whole tree of our material existence. And that means the false ego. And once you've done that, once you've uprooted the false ego, and you're fixed in real ego that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, then your whole material existence dies. The whole tree dies. The whole tree of your material existence dies, including your attachment to fancy cars and all the other things. So therefore, Krishna consciousness means not just that one by one we eliminate our different attachments, but we go for the root of our material existence. This is Krishna consciousness. Give up the identification with this world. Accept the identity that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, and then mold my life like that. And then all your other attachments, be it whatever it may, attachment to nice motor cars, to living in comfortable situations, nice fancy clothes, jewelry, the opposite sex, name and fame, and just whatever. The list is endless, really. But all those things die. All those attachments die when the false ego is uprooted. The whole tree of our material existence is uprooted. It all dies at one time, as they say, in one fell swoop. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions?
Maharaj, few questions I want to ask you. One might seem a bit unusual. But just you're talking about all living entities got false ego.
Yes.
Does that mean that all even non-moving living entities have got false ego?
Of course. You're not moving right now. None of us are moving. We've all got some tendency towards false ego. But yeah, somehow or other they've got that type of identity. And even there's a place Prabhupada mentions that the man is walking his dog on the lead. And the man is thinking, there's me and my dog, and I'm taking my dog for a walk. But Prabhupada says, the dog is turning around and saying, look, there he is, there's my human being. I'm taking him for a walk. And they pass by the tree. And Prabhupada says, the tree is watching them. And the tree is thinking, ah, look at this human and this dog. They don't know how to enjoy life like me, like a tree. The human thinks, ah, oh, it's just a dog. The dog thinks, ah, oh, just a human being. And the tree thinks, ah, oh, human being, dog, just frail little living entities. What can they do?
And now, this thing I was thinking about when you were talking about Christmas glance. Sometimes if you say something to somebody, or you some that they're not really happy with, they don't react like physically, and they look at you like this. I don't know if it's like you're going to feel it's like it goes, it hits you.
Right.
Is that a perverted reflection of Krishna's glance?
It I've must be. Well, yeah, it must be. They say, what do they say? Something daggers. A glance which is throwing daggers. Yes. There's some saying I think.
Burn a hole in your soul.
But there is. Oh, yeah. Some devotee told me once. He was in, would you believe, a public toilet. Suddenly he felt, someone's watching me. He just got some intuition. And he looked up, and someone was up looking over the door. Okay. Any other comment or question?
It's such a good analogy to things. I think it's when you're talking about the dog. The dog, the man thinks that the dog is his best friend, but the dog thinks actually man is the dog's best friend because the dog needs to be taken care of more than the man does. But when you were describing to the material nature, I never actually heard this song, but someone said there was a country song where the man was singing. It shows that we think we simplified our life. He says, I'm just a very simple man. I really only want four things. What was it? Older whiskey, younger women, faster cars, and more money. Now, I'm sure that person can't be alive, right? Because all those things are... But they're thinking that's the simple. I only want four things.
With regards to the analogy of cutting off the trees and the roots, I don't think I can like personally tell whether I'm cutting off the leaves, I mean the branches, or if I'm taking off the roots. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't think I can tell if I'm just giving up attachment or if I'm really accepting that I'm Krishna's servant. So to speak, I don't think I can personally tell what I'm doing.
Well, if you practice Krishna consciousness nicely, the consciousness, your consciousness will become clearer. And in whatever you're doing, it'll become clearer what's happening. But the thing is, just the fact that you, any of us, have accepted... just accepted, at least in principle, that Krishna is God, I'm his servant, and therefore I should live like that or try and develop like that. That is on the level of ego, of identity, who I am. Yeah. That's very specifically on the level of identity. My personal identification. How I see myself. And then we try and apply it in our lives by taking up the process and chanting and rendering devotional service and all the various parts of Krishna consciousness. Then that will clear, that will strengthen our, at least you could say, conviction that who am I? Who am I? I'm a servant of Krishna. And therefore, because I'm a servant of Krishna, even though I may be working at a job, a non-Krishna conscious job, if you have a family or whatever, just if you're not living in a temple, even though I'm working at a job, I am not a worker. I am a devotee. But because of my situation, I have to work. But I'm not now, an office worker or whatever it may be, a salesperson or a manager or doctor. No, I'm a devotee. But I'm doing this type of work just to maintain my family or maintain myself.
in Krishna consciousness, because my life, who I am, I'm a devotee, my life is for Krishna consciousness. So the more one applies, I mean, just to come to the point of practicing to some degree means that idea is there within the mind to some degree. But to really get it to crystallize and become clear and strong, it's strengthened through the practice of Krishna consciousness, through the chanting, reading, and all the different aspects. Yeah. So we're talking about our fundamental concept of who I am, what I am, and on that basis, what's my life? Because what is a person's life? It is just an expression of what they are, how they see themselves. That comes first. What comes first is, how do I see myself? And then what comes is, okay, what shall I do now? The first step is how I see myself. But it happens, it can happen, and sometimes it does, with devotees, because somehow or other, you know, they've got material attachments, and they find they're becoming attracted. So they become confused on the level of identity. Even though, you know, basically I'm accepting myself as a devotee, but I have a serious interest in getting involved in some material activity. It means that I'm accepting myself, I'm in the sort of in the process or partially accepting myself as being this body and being a part of the material world. Therefore, I'm seriously contemplating, maybe I should actually get involved in some material activity. So the first part of the crisis in that sort of situation is on the level of identity. Because if you're fixed in understanding, I'm not this body, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, then when some hint comes of, you know, some other attractions, then one will know, wait a minute, I can't get involved in this. And then one will become more resolute in one's practice to avoid getting dragged into that other activity. You follow what I mean?
Yes, I follow, Maharaj. I'm just, if that activity, like, is it possible to use that activity in Krishna consciousness to sort of relieve yourself of that identification? I don't know if that
makes well sense. It may be, it depends what it is.
Well, like for instance, someone who's an artist, if it becomes very much like an identification, sort of like a lifestyle, so to speak. So you find that, you know, like someone who's a musician or whatever, like very often they're very attached to their talent or whatever. And to turn around and see themselves as a servant of Krishna.
Yes, so they can dovetail it in Krishna's service.
We hope that they'll give up that identification.
Well, yeah, they can dovetail it, do art for Krishna, or whatever it may be.
I have two questions, Maharaj. The first one is, does the material world exist continually or continuously, or does it start at some point in terms of Mahavishnu's glance?
It's continuous. But it's cyclical.
Okay.
There, he glances, everything unfolds and comes to this stage, then everything falls to pieces and becomes pradhan again. And then he glances again. So it's cyclical. And there was never a time when he glanced the first time. It's always been going on. The first glance.
The second question is about that verse, the unpurified intelligence. So say someone, as you said, they've made substantial progress, these, you know, like impersonalists or these philosophers, so they've overcome certain conditionings, like maybe the mind, senses. So is it that they have not overcome the false ego because they haven't accepted themselves as Krishna's servants? And is it that the false ego tricks them into thinking that they have? And that is where the problem is.
Well, you could say, yes, that's one way of looking at it. Yeah. The senses they may have under control in a certain sense. The mind they may have under control, you know, at least in terms that it's not just running around trying to enjoy material existence. But the false ego, who am I? You know, that they haven't really dealt with. Even maybe they say, well, they've only partially dealt with it. If they say, well, aham brahmasmi. But they haven't really dealt with the false ego. And then, therefore, the idea comes, oh, I'm God. Oh, yes, I'm God. They can accept it. But it's like a monster. In terms of anathas, to think you're God, sure, that's not a small thing.
So if they feel themselves liberated, that's a trick of the false ego?
Yeah, well, that's how that verse expresses it, abhishuddha buddhaya, because their intelligence is impure. They can't become attached to the Lord. And they can't see themselves as being devotees. And the false ego tells them, oh, you're God, or you're this, or you're liberated. But then Patanjali, suddenly, bang, they're just in material existence again.
Between the Mahatattva and the Pradhan?
Well, Mahatattva means when all the ingredients have come out. Yeah, they're all assembled there. And then Garbhadaksha Vishnu, then Lord Brahma, puts them, makes them into the planets, the species, like that. Hare Krishna.
So just one little question. Maharaj, what does the word Vaishnava actually mean?
Follower of Vishnu.
How does that work out in terms of grammar?
Vishnu. Vaishnava. Like that. Follower of Vishnu. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.